air, and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses. Class for K. Yeah, all right, here we go. It's all getting pretty exciting in here. There you go.
Wow. Are we on? Is this thing on?
We're happening. Everything's going all right. How do you like that? Kayla's on the machine now. Everything's pulling together. Good morning, people. It is now Wednesday, right? Today's Wednesday, Mark Riley.
Is it Wednesday?
I didn't even get to finish my little intro. Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, working class heroes, latent haters, liberals and conservatives of all kinds. We're going to Boston on Friday.
Yes,
I'm getting excited. You know, it's weird, Riley. I got on. I actually went to our blog. Briefly, yesterday, only for a few minutes. I really had to detach from it. Because
becoming a slave to the rhythm once again.
No, blog bitching for me. You know, too many blog bullies and blog snots and blog babies out there. And a couple blog lovers, but I'm within three posts. I hit this blog bully, Fred. He's like, wow, Marin has a car? What is he, a Republican? You know what I mean? Like, I talked about my Russian driver yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently this guy's just too stupid to realize how big cities work, and it's called a car service. And what happens is at 2:30 in the morning when I come in to do this show, there's no cabs in Queens. And I'm not going to walk down to the subway at 2:30 and wait an hour and a half to get here. So it would behoove the powers that be here at Air America to have their talent driven to the show by a car service.
Car service.
Yeah. It's like, you know, but he's like automatically just being this sort of narrow-minded liberal douchebag.
Is he from here?
I don't know where he's from. But, you know, it's just sort of like this idea that, you know, you can just characterize people by some sort of your interpretation of a habit they might do, and that indicates something else to them. You know, it's unbelievable. Thank God I took the copter in today. You know, it's good when they, you know, I had them send the helicopter because I didn't have time for the car. I had to get the copter in. How'd you get here? You drive your car.
I drive my car in, yeah. And that's my choice because they had a car for me for a good while. I just enjoy driving my own car.
It's incredible how people misread signs or misunderstand things and misinterpret things and decide what they decide is important. It's unbelievable how narrow-minded some people can be. But anyways, we're going to Boston this weekend. We're going to be in Somerville. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I lived in Boston for years. We're going to be in Davis Square at the Someday Cafe. We're going to have Barney Frank on. We're going to have Jimmy Pingle on. We're going to have Ted Leo on. He's going to rock. That's going to be good. Barry Crimmins is probably going to stop by. There are no tickets necessary. Just come by, you know, have a cup of coffee, hang out. We're going to have some free stuff, T-shirts and stuff, while supplies last. Can't guarantee we'll have them all day, but we're certainly going to bring some stuff up. Jimmy Tingle's coming. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
I did already, huh? And then I'm going to be performing at the Tingle's Theater right there in Somerville at the big Best of Boston Comedy, the Ding Ho Reunion. That's going
to
be cool.
Now, explain this Ding Ho place, because it seems to have like a real special place in the hearts of many comics who've done time in Boston.
Well, basically, the Ding Ho was a Chinese restaurant in Somerville, and they had a comedy show there that, you know, went on for years. I caught the tail end of it, but it was a place where, for some reason, it was just this groovy comedy room, and it was just this renowned place. It was a crappy restaurant that had a bar, and they started producing comedy in there. And one of the bigger stories is, you know, all the big dudes, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait, Kevin Meaney, you know, Lenny Clark, Stephen Wright was found at the Ding Ho. The story goes that the booker for Carson was visiting his kid in Boston at college and decided to go catch a little comedy at this place because it was nearby, and that's where Stephen Wright was discovered.
Wow.
Discovered right there at the Ding Ho in Cambridge. I lived in Somerville for a couple years. I lived in Brookline for a couple years up by BU when I went to BU.
So this is really kind of like a straight-up homecoming for you and, of course, Dan Patchman, son of Lewis and Linda Patchman, who also attended
He went
college.
To Tufts.
He went to Tufts.
You know, it's weird. I never go back to Boston. I don't know why. You know, I lived there on and off for like 7 years. You know, when I was out in L.A. the first time after I graduated college and I hit the wall, I came back to Boston. Started my comedy career over again. And then, like, I was there for, you know, another, you know, 3 or 4 years, but I just never went back. I don't know why. I don't really go back that often.
Really?
There's something about the city, as charming and quaint as it is, there's something about you can never go back to college again, number one. And there's some part of me that still thinks I'm, you know, just a couple years out of college, which is sad. You know, I mean, when I go to Boston, I walk around, I see these kids, and I'm like, oh, my God, that guy's wearing my old shirt. That guy's wearing my shoes. That guy is just like me when I was, you know, and there's some part of me that's still in college, still in high school, still 7 years old. But when I go up there, you know, I realized like, how far I've come and where I am. And also the city, it's one of the cities that has been so, is gentrified the right word? It's been sort of plowed under, you know. When I was there, Kenmore Square was this sort of, you know, kind of demonic place that, you know, that had the Ratskeller was there. You'd go see rock and roll shows. They had Storyville. They had all these bars and Pizza Pad and all this, you know, really sort of unique kind of dirty businesses there in Kenmore. Now there's nothing there. It's like a mall. So a lot of the personality that I remember from being there has been sucked out.
But you know what? That's true of a lot of cities up and down the East Coast. Washington's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to certain parts of Washington. When we were down there over Thanksgiving, you know, my wife went up, you know, we rode around a couple of places where she used to hang out when she was in college, and it's a completely different place. These cities are constantly reinventing themselves, and 99 times out of 100, when they do so, they make themselves so expensive that a lot of the normal people that used to be in these communities are gone.
Well, like Somerville, that's a good example, was a real working class sort of area of outside of Boston. It's actually outside of Cambridge. And when I lived there, it hadn't turned around, but apparently where we're going now, Davis Square, is like a little hipster paradise. When I was there, it was still primarily kind of gritty and, you know, not dangerous or anything, but just, you know, it was just its own thing. It was, it had its own history before it's from, you know, become a hipster sort of area or more gentrified, I guess. But I remember Davis Square used to have just, you know, these really kind of dirty cafeteria restaurants, and, you know, and there's a Dunkin' Donuts right down the street from me, you know, which we'll talk to Passman about. We got Passman coming on to do some
Boston rules.
But I used to love it, man. I lived in an attic in Somerville.
Really?
Yeah. So it was a group house. There was like eight people in there. It was the weirdest bunch of people in the world.
But you all got along, though.
There was a guy that thought he was a genius who lived down the hall from me, this musician, this keyboard player. And there was a couple of guys from this one band that lived in the house. But this guy down the hall was kind of creepy. He had sort of his room looked like sort of a mixture between, you know, a library and some sort of opium den. And he used to sit there and read books about Hitler. And I think he's the one who let my cat out. My first cat that I ever had, I think that guy
maybe gentrification
out.
Wasn't such a bad thing after
didn't like
all.
That guy. And then Stan lived downstairs. He had his own record company. And then,
really?
Yeah, a couple other. And then there was Evan lived there for a while. There's a guy, Mark, that lived there for a while. Kofi and Diane, I think. It was just like the place.
Kofi Annan lived in your building?
He did. And I think that's what really started him towards the course that he took, because our building was sort of hard and we all came from a lot of different areas. And just managing the house, it was actually a house up there on Cottage Avenue. And it was rumored that Tracy Chapman had lived on the other side of the house. And
really?
Like, that's some big deal. Like, you know, that, you know, I didn't. Parties or anything, you know.
No.
I got nothing against Tracy Chapman, but it's not like
I got something against Tracy's hair.
You do?
Oh man,
yeah. She had a cool guitar player. That that woman who played guitar for her was kind of cool. She just kind of laid out these blues riffs, and you just you know, it was kind of surprising.
She went to high school near where I grew up, actually. She
really?
She went to high school in Danbury. Yeah,
it's weird. Here we have these Tracy Chapman stories. She lived at the. Yeah, whatever happened to Tracy Chapman?
She's on oldie shows, I guess. I don't know.
But this is not the big news. So have you spent time in Boston?
See, my time in Boston, I don't want to really get into it too deep, because most of my time spent in Boston had to do with drum and bugle corps stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because Boston used to be a hotbed for drum corps when I was, you know, growing up. And they used to have all of these major contests up there. They used to have a contest called the CYO Nationals, which, of course, was sponsored by the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was something called the World Open, which used to happen in, actually, well, they still have a contest in Lynn.
Yeah.
And we used to go up there at least two or three times every summer.
Right.
And, you know, we would kind of get into Boston in the early hours of the morning. We rehearse all day.
Uh-huh.
We'd go do this contest.
Uh-huh.
We'd go stop at probably one of those places to eat. And then we'd be on our way back to New York all the time. So.
It's a very unique place. You know, Boston and Lynn and all the suburbs that surround it, there's nothing like it. And I did a show yesterday with Sue Costello, and there's that accent that they have. Hey, who farted? Who farted? You know, it's just like, you know, it got to the point with me. I think one of the reasons I never went back is I just could not handle hearing that accent. You hear it so much. There's a type of county in the Boston area that is just so unique that, you know, if you get too much of it, you just have to go away for a few years.
Well, it's going to be tough now because, you know, the Red Sox won the World Series for the first time since 1918.
Yeah.
So, you know, people in Boston are pretty full of that. You know,
yeah.
And the Patriots, of course, are the champions of the NFL, the defending champions. So Boston, you know, when a city like Boston has really great sports teams, they become insufferable.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Larson, did you find yourself not being able to go back? Larson's in the booth. Clutch Larson.
That's right.
Yeah.
He went to Tufts, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you feel the same way I do. I mean, I'm very excited because there's part of my heart in Boston. There's no doubt about that. You know, and there's definitely part of my heart in Somerville. Look, we got a great show today coming up. We've got Kenneth Miller. He's a professor of biology at Brown University. He's going to explain why evolution is not a theory but a fact. He's
the author of intelligent design thing down to rest.
Well, you know, some people think that there's only one issue that's of primary importance right now. But I think that stopping the neocon death cult's Christo-fascist zombie brigades is certainly right up there with some of the most important stuff we can do right now. And we got Vanity Fair. Is contributing editor James Wolcott a bunch later in the show to sort of talk about what's going on with the FCC, what's going on in the media, what's going on with Dan Rather. Hopefully we'll have a full conversation about this and that media. And next, of course, we have Pashman's Rules. So that's always engaging to get the hyper-excited joie de vivre of Mr. Dan Pashman, Senator Lewis, and Linda Pashman in here after the break. So stay with us. It's 16 past the hour on Air America Radio. To pass the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Good morning.
How are you, Riley?
I'm doing great.
That's great. You're listening to Air America Radio. This Sunday, December 12th, at the Ohio State House at noon, there will be a rally. Go to donotconcede.com. Check it out. See what's going on. I think there's a plan to hold hands around the
around
entire
Capitol.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
to get every vote counted. Also, Howard Dean will be giving a major address today at noon Eastern Time. Go to www.democracyforamerica.com to view the webcast. Hopefully he will be the new Democratic Committee chairman, right?
The DNC chair, yeah.
The Democratic, yeah. DNC chair. That would be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Now, right now, what are we doing right now? Okay, we are, modern life has grown increasingly hectic these days, and we here at Morning Sedition want to help. Now in the studio is a man known to spend an inordinate amount of time pondering subjects, both large and small, so much so that we've decided it constitutes a philosophy, which we call Pashman's Rules. Here now is the man who some people think is one of the major powers here at Air America Radio, editorial producer Dan Pashman. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. So you lived in Boston for how long?
I lived there for 6 years.
But really, Medford, yes?
5 years in Medford, then Medford and Somerville, 1 year in downtown Boston.
A lot of people who don't live anywhere near this place and think that a car service is some sort of indication of political leaning might not know what that means to be in Medford and Somerville. How far is that from Boston? How does that play into the Boston?
It's really not far. Boston is actually a geographically very small city.
Mm-hmm.
To put it in New York terms, I mean, you could be in Somerville, and that's kind of like living in the Upper West Side versus the Village.
Uh-huh. Really?
You know, it's 20 minutes on the train.
Well, that's not quite true. It's a very different world out there. You go to Somerville, the difference between Somerville and Boston, the weird thing about Boston is very provincial, and there's definitely areas that you could walk across the street, and you're like, oh, my God, when did we get to Ireland?
Right. Actually, you know what a better comparison maybe is like Brooklyn versus Manhattan.
Yeah, that's a little bit. Yeah, that's Somerville.
Now, does the subway run to Somerville?
Yes, it does. Although it stops running at 12:30 at night.
Ooh. It's a lot different. Yeah, their subways, though they're clean and efficient, they look like toys compared to the New York City subway system.
Yeah, I actually wrote a 5-part series about Boston public transit. We won't get into that right now.
A what?
A 5-part series about Boston public transportation.
For which outlet?
For Boston's Weekly Dig, which I used to write for.
Now, let's talk about that. What's on your mind today about that? What are you going to talk about?
I just want to first say that I am so pumped
for
Boston.
Give
it's going to be awesome. And I know it's early right now, so whoever's listening in Boston right now are our early bird listeners, and I will advise them to get there early to the Someday Cafe, because I assure you that I'm predicting that by 7 p.m. there will not be a spot in the house, and by 8 they'll be in the sidewalks looking in through the windows.
But 7 a.m. you mean?
Yeah, you got to get there before 7 a.m. if you want to see.
If there's still people hanging out at 7 p.m., then it's not really on us.
That's kind of sad, really.
Ted Leo was here. And Mark Maron was right there. Mark Riley.
If you look really close, you can still see him.
That was with the cup he was drinking out of.
Oh God. Oh wait a minute. I'm not sure I want to go to Boston now.
Oh come on, Riley.
No,
it's going to be a good time.
I know it's going to be a good time.
So what now are you going to tell us about? The big dig. Now, when I was there, I went to college in Boston from, 81 to 87. Don't ask. I was on an extended plan. I did 4 years. And the last year, I took I took a little time. And, I had some things to do. I had some drugs to do and some grill cooking to do.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to live it.
Yeah.
But by the time I was there, the expressway was already, you know, under construction and breaking down, and it was, you know, constant traffic in that weird sort of multi-bridged area right outside of downtown. And you are a huge proponent of the Big Dig.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell people
why?
What the Big Dig is. The Big Dig is the most expensive and most complex, most amazing construction project in American history, and one of the most complex, expensive, and amazing in human history.
Hmm. But wait, are you talking like this is compared to the pyramids?
It is the Great Wall of China of our generation. All right? Yeah, that's how amazing it is.
How would people in Boston feel about you saying this?
I'm sure they. I'm a little bit upset that people in Boston, they're down on the Big Dig.
Yeah.
It's several years late and several billion dollars over budget, and apparently it has thousands of leaks.
But who cares?
I say
Catherine
likes it. Yeah, exactly. People need to get beyond that. That stuff will be a distant memory 50 years from now when the heart of Boston has been completely and totally transformed.
And so will we all be a distant memory 50 years from now.
Talk for yourself, Riley.
Yeah, really, speak for yourself, Riley.
What?
I'm planning on living to at least 102.
All right, you watch and see.
The point is, a couple billion dollars in a couple of years.
How did this become a bummer? Now I've got to watch and see and speculate as to when.
The Big Dig is not a bummer, my friend.
No,
the
I know.
Big Dig is about hope.
It's about hope, and I've seen it. I've not been in it. I have not been up there in time to see. I've seen pictures of the huge bridges and everything.
I've got the wall calendar.
But where is it leaking, dude? In the tunnel?
No, apparently it's like in the casing and it's leaking around. It's probably getting a little water in the tunnel. It's not even that big of a deal. I mean, look, people of Boston, you put the mafia in charge of a construction project. What do you really expect to have happen?
So now we're going to be taken out.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get to the Sunday Cafe and it's like,
Where's Bashman?
There he is. Get Bashman. What kind of show is this? Right. That's all. Yeah. Offend the Boston mob. That's all.
Yeah, there you go. The state's filing a $100 million suit over this Big Dig.
Yeah,
right.
By the way, if you haven't made your bones and you want to meet Dan Pashman.
Someday Cafe.
Right.
I'm sorry, man. You're going to be part of the Big Dig.
Yeah, right. I'm going to be plugging some of those leaks.
Oh, my goodness.
So what are we going to do now? Are you coming back, or do we have sandwich talk, or what? What's going on?
I can talk about Boston.
All right, look,
you
know, we've got news to do, but we'll come back with you for a few minutes. That's Dan Pashman. What else we got, right? Riley, I think we got the Palm Pilot coming up. We're going to talk about the intelligence bill.
The intelligence bill, which has passed the House, and we're going to have the liberal agenda here on Air America Radio. Stay with us.
Yes, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Mark Riley sitting right there. I see him every morning.
There
I spend
is.
More time with Riley than I spend with anybody. Do you understand
you
that? But I spend time with you, Dan Pashman, and Clutch Larson, and P.W. McDonald, who's busy. You know, I just see P.W. on the teacups with ears, you know, down in Orlando, maybe at the Epcot Center. Having a good time, laughing.
I picture him and Mickey standing next to each other with the castle in the background, waving and smiling in identical positions.
All right, so here we go. That was weird that Ramon came in judicial gowns.
Yeah.
Because today's Antonin Scalia's Palm Pilot. Here's the schedule for the justice there. 6 a.m., wake up. Morning confession. Forgive me, founding fathers, for I have sinned. 8 a.m., participate in living nativity scene on steps of Supreme Court. Cast, Thomas is Joseph, Sandra is Mary, I will be all three wise men. No, what do we do with Ginsburg? Maybe she'll fit in the manger.
Ooh.
10 a.m., if selected, look into getting a Pope hat for Chief Justice Scalia.
What?
11 a.m., approved secret plan to install giant Ten Commandments monument. Note, must be large enough to obscure FDR memorials. 3 p.m., new things to blame on separation of church and state. Internet. Internet pop-ups, cat dander, the death of scripted television. 4 p.m., must change pagan Indian state names, i.e. Massachusetts to Deuteronomy, Iowa to Leviticus, Idaho to Second Chronicles, etc. 8 p.m., check rapture kit, Bible, 38 pistol, $200 in gold coins. bottled water, unibrow tweezers, letter of introduction from Billy Graham. That's it. He's got a big day.
Yeah,
he's got
sure
a lot
does.
Of things on his mind. We're going to talk about some more of those things in a minute, but right now we're going to finish up with Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey. Sorry, Linda, it's not tired. I will say it like a bar mitzvah invitation for the rest of time. So, Dan, what were we just talking about? Oh, Boston. I lived there for 7 years. I don't know, for 7 years.
Yeah.
The drivers in Boston, you have a theory.
Well, I just want to generally talk about, and you know, you and I agree on this, that Boston drivers are the worst drivers
horrendous.
In the world
horrendous.
That I've ever seen anywhere.
They are pretty bad.
After driving in Boston for a couple of years, I forgot that I even had turn signals.
Yeah.
Like, they're irrelevant. I mean, yeah. If your taillights go out, they shouldn't be able to give tickets
yeah.
for a taillight being out in Boston because you don't need them.
No.
And Boston drivers, I find, they just wander. From mm-hmm. one lane to the next, they
yeah.
wander out of side streets. They just roll right out of the side street in the middle of the street. They don't look. They don't mean to cut you off.
I have a theory about it. What's your theory about it?
Well, it's not a theory. It's a sort of a definition.
Well, here's a theory.
Go on,
Boston.
Go on.
The thing is that Boston, like unlike New York, which is a grid,
right.
Okay, it is a rectangular box with cross hatching. You know that's how the streets work here. Boston is based on a crescent model. You have a point, which is Boston, and all the major interstates go out at a diagonal. So the entire thing looks like a giant fan. So anytime you're going west on any major interstate or any small interstate, you're not really going west. You're going some variation of southwest or northwest. So I just think because of the semicircle model, that people drive not like people on a grid.
It's true. The streets are so messed up there. It's really because they were designed for horses and carriages. And in the olden days, what they did was, they'd have a central point like City Hall or whatever, and
right.
they'd build one main road from there to another main point somewhere else.
Well, that was one of my problems. When I was there, I had a horse and carriage, and it's just they're not right now. They don't work now. They
it's
don't.
True.
Yeah. So, Dan, before you get out of here.
Yeah. Is that a hint?
We've got news to do. There's people out there chomping at the bit.
I know.
There's people on the blog that are seething right now.
We do have to talk about the issues.
Yes, we do. Well, we do have to talk about the issues because they're important. We can't just be entertaining.
No, I know.
That's crazy.
There are people out there crying on the blog.
Well, there's also some good people. There's a little love. There's a few people left that still love. Mayor's there and Melanie's there and David in Japan with his, victim's English. Marin is face bashing the victim's English. Face bashing! And then, and then who's out there? Oh, yeah, Great American Patriot is still out there. They're all still out there.
I don't read the blog.
Me neither. I swear to God, I just checked in last night because I have, I still have an inner blog, biatch. So, anyways, Pashman.
Yes.
What's the Dunkin' Donuts rap? Because the first time I ever drank Dunkin' Donuts coffee was actually in Somerville, Massachusetts, and I was spoiled because I worked at a fancy coffee place before Starbucks. This was the Coffee Connection in Harvard Square, which was one of those sort of salon kind of boutique coffee joints before Starbucks even existed. All right, and then Dunkin' Donuts came out with the big one. Do you remember? The big one?
Yes. The great one, I believe it was called.
Yeah, that's what I called it.
Yeah.
Because, man, that stuff, I drink that in the morning, but you got a theory about Dunkin' Donuts coffee in Boston?
Well, it's pretty intricate. I don't know if we're going to have time to get into it.
I think our listeners can handle it if they're not too upset that we're talking about nothing.
Well, it's all iced coffee related. As you know, I drink iced coffee all winter long. I don't like hot coffee, really.
This is another weird thing. That there's weird Pashman closet.
Yeah.
He doesn't like hot sauce, can't handle mustard, and now he drinks iced coffee year round.
Yeah.
See, sometimes you sound just a kind of a beacon of rock and roll manhood, and then other times there's these weird little wuss closets.
Why is it wussish to drink iced coffee when it's 10 degrees outside?
Because you drink coffee. You drink iced coffee at 10 degrees?
Yeah.
Why not hot coffee?
Because I like iced coffee better.
No, but see, hot coffee is more potent.
That's not true.
It is true.
Not if you get more.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
The point is that one of the challenges with iced coffee is getting the sugar to dissolve in the iced coffee.
That's why I use Splenda. Man, I'm freaking out, man.
Dude, how far is your pen in your mouth right now? You okay? For our listeners out there, Marin is just eating a pen.
You make him nervous.
Stockpiling Splenda packets.
Right.
No, he just talked about sugar dissolving. I'm like, I don't have to deal with that problem at all because Splenda magically dissolves.
Yeah, it dissolves in anything.
And what,
I'm sure that's totally natural. There's nothing to be concerned about.
You should see it dissolve on a spoon right before you boot it, man. I'm screwed up on that.
You have to light it up, right?
I'm screwed up on the Splenda, man. I'm over the top. Go ahead.
Well, just that the technique that I developed in conjunction with some help from my friend Stacy was the double cup.
Yeah.
You get iced coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, you get a double cup, and you pour the coffee back and forth between the two cups until the sugar dissolves.
Oh.
It works quite well. Dunkin' Donuts, though, in recent years has developed a new system. Now, I commend them for attempting to innovate to deal with this problem of sugar dissolving in the iced coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And they created like a syrup that they add to iced coffee as opposed to spooning regular white sugar in like they do for hot coffee.
They've been doing that a long time. Some of the bodegas do it and the Thai people do it, that liquid sugar.
Right.
That's the way to go.
Now, I applaud them for trying to innovate, but my problem with it does not taste as good. First of all, it's syrupy.
Yeah.
They put too much. It's sweeter than normal sugar, and they misestimate. It waters the coffee down, and it makes it too sweet.
So. Wow, that's some deep stuff. I'm going to have to really kind of...
You're going to have to write Mr. Duncan.
Yeah, and also, from what I understand, Dunkin' Donuts contributes more of their money to Republicans. You know, after you go to ChooseTheBlue.com, you start to realize, you know, if you want to boycott or protest, you know, Republican contributors, all that we have left on the fast food level, folks, is Arby's. So I hope you like particle meat. Dan Pashman, thank you very much for your input. I hope you changed some lives today. I feel like you did.
I think so, and I'm looking forward to Boston, guys.
Boston. All right. We will be in Somerville at the Someday Cafe in Davis Square Friday. Our guests will include Congressman Barney Frank. See you later, Dan. I'll see you in a minute, and probably right when you go into the other room and you're in the window with Clutch. All right. Always a pleasure. Sorry we didn't have the music today, but apparently technology is conspiring against us.
Next time.
So, yeah, Jimmy Tingle, Ted Leo is going to be with us. Barney Frank, as I said, Barry Crimmins, no tickets are necessary. Just come by anytime, 6 to 9. We'll be hanging out.
Swag?
We got swag. Swag.
Swag. Oh, I'm sorry. We can't call it swag.
You remember Clutch corrected us? It's swag.
Swag.
Yeah, and Pashman was insistent that it was swag. Man, I can just hear people going, what are they doing? What are they doing? This is Air America. Why are they just talking about nothing? We will talk about intelligence reform and more after this. It's 42 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Your daily wake-up call to arms. I'm Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron on Morning Sedition here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How are you, Mark? You feeling all right?
I'm feeling okay.
I don't know what's wrong with me today, but I feel great. It's Wednesday and I feel great. What is that about? I hate when I feel good and I can't put my finger on why.
That's okay. Just go with it.
Yeah, I know I'll go with it, but I'd like to repeat it tomorrow. How do you do that?
Just repeat the same routine.
Is it the tea? Was it the two bags of smart food? Was it the oatmeal earlier?
What
was
smart food? Oh,
the popcorn.
Stuff. Yeah, I tried that this morning, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Let's not. I don't want people to sit here and speculate. We are not being paid by Dunkin' Donuts, M&M's, Smart Food, or Splenda, all right? This just happens to be our strange habits. And in the world we live in today, we all make corporate allegiances with products that we enjoy and love, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There was some stuff going around the blog, around the weird sort of marginal internet circle that I'm involved with. I get all the updates on this and that goings-ons, but there were some questions as to Whole Foods' integrity as an outlet. Apparently they had some issues with an employee problems, people wanting to unionize and not being treated properly, but it turns out it's not really necessarily true that they resolved some of that stuff. It's interesting about email circles when you get into a circle of people that, constantly forwarding each other emails and you're getting all this sort of breaking news, blog news, election fraud news, Whole Foods news, lists, Choose the Blue news, all this stuff that a lot of times you get one email and then two emails later they're like, wait, don't forward that one. You're like, damn, already did. You know what I mean? So let's talk with some hard news. The hard news is that the House overwhelmingly approved the overhaul of intelligence.
336-75. This is the last major hurdle. It's going to restructure the nation's intelligence community, but there's a lot that has yet to be resolved about this, Mark Maron. It does create that intelligence czar that the 9/11 Commission recommended. And ironically enough, at least two of the three accounts of the bill's passage that I read say that it will, in fact, that this particular person will have substantial control over that $40 billion that this country spends on intelligence every year.
Wow. And the thing that made me sort of tickled when you said it was that because Porter Goss is a neocon death cult puppet, that when you told me that, he might have to take the back seat to the new intelligence director, for whatever reason, I'm just like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, well, the director of Central Intelligence will no longer report to the president which has been the case since 1947.
And I don't know why I think that's necessarily a good thing, only other than, you know, the president has been able to manipulate the intelligence coming out of the CIA. I'm not saying that with this new post that that would be any different, but for some reason I like it when these guys take a, you know, any of them who are ambitious and on their own career path, which all of them are, take a little bit of a hit for whatever reason. It just makes me happy.
Oh, yeah. Now, there are some winners and losers in this entire battle because, you know, it wasn't that long ago, Mark, that people thought this intelligence reform bill was dead in the water.
Mm-hmm.
The big winner out of all of this is Susan Collins, a senator from Maine, Republican senator from Maine, who was one of the co-authors of the intelligence bill as it was written in the Senate, along with Joe Lieberman.
Uh-huh.
Now, what's interesting about Susan Collins, who's, by the way, whose birthday was yesterday, she shares it with our own Wayne Gilman.
Yeah.
Well, Susan Collins now says that she will not support Porter Goss for the new intelligence czar's gig.
So not only is he going to have to take back seat to the czar, but he's being shut out as the guy who might be the next czar, because you know he's gunning for that. He wants to be king. They all want to be king.
They want to be king, but now Collins has got a lot of juice because she's the person that really shepherded this whole thing through the Senate. Now, the flip side of this is that your boy Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin in the House is still standing firm. He got his leg cracked, but he was still standing firm that he wanted to see to it that illegal immigrants could not get driver's licenses.
Uh-huh.
For him, this is an anti-terror issue. Duncan Hunter, who had also stood with Sensenbrenner, but for different reasons in opposition to the bill, he caved. He and John Warner said, okay, you know, they got things done so that it appears as though they were mollified.
Yeah.
Sensenbrenner never was. Sensenbrenner stood fast. Some of his more conservative colleagues, you know, gave him a round of applause, but he went up in flames, or went down in flames.
Now, let's talk about the money, Riley, because, you know, we were trying to follow the money, and we were under the assumption that, you know, Rumsfeld was really sort of, you know, not going to be, you know, separated from his $40 billion, because in order to be one of the prime movers of the neocon death cult, you got to have some dough.
You got to have
what
some dough.
What happens to that $40 billion?
Well, it's actually 32, because Rumsfeld controls 80%.
Well, that means nothing.
Yeah, that means nothing.
That's
chump
change. Yeah,
yeah. No, see, this is what still has yet to be resolved in all this, Mark, and that's the question of the relationship between Rumsfeld and the Department of Defense and this new intelligence czar. The reports are saying that, yes, he does have control. This new intelligence czar will have control over most of that $40 billion. When I saw that, the first thing that came to my mind was Bush is going to make sure that Rumsfeld approves of whoever he names.
Right.
Because there's no way in the world that, you know, with Rumsfeld now agreeing to stay on at least for a good part of this second term, that Bush would alienate him out of the box quickly.
And Rumsfeld needs somebody he can say, don't tell me you can't give me $5 billion when I want it. You give me when I want it. I got things to do here.
That's right. Now, there are other people who are being actually...
Bastard.
Yeah, right. Are being considered here. And these are some very interesting names. Former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn, who used to be chair of the Senate Armed Service Commission. Warren Rudman, New Hampshire Republican, who was on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Bastard.
And possibly three members of the September 11th Commission themselves. Tom Kaine, who was the chair of the commission. Lee Hamilton, who was the vice chair, who was a Democrat. And John Layman, who is the former Navy Secretary in the Reagan administration. These three names are also being bandied about.
That dude, I've seen we've talked to some of those guys. Did we talk to Lee Hamilton?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, he was a good guy, nice guy, interesting guy, smart dude.
Yeah, but now, again, Susan Collins says that she will not support Porter Goss. His name is still in the mix, but that's going to be a very big hurdle. And remember that this has got to go. Whoever gets named this intelligence czar is going to have to go through a confirmation
hearing. Well, it's a good thing, because Porter Hack is a partisan stooge, and that's been the problem with him all along. You know, the idea that we were talking about, that if he is CIA director and this thing didn't go down like it did, that, you know, he would get, you know, he's already fired a lot of people. A lot of people in the CIA are bitter. They're pissed off. They're leaving.
This is their revenge.
Right. Exactly. Because the integrity of the agency has been compromised, and the possibility for them to get, you know, real information, you know, through to the sources that need it becomes compromised if it's a partisan agency. And the big fear was that, you know, he would just, you know, maneuver the information in the way that Bush wanted it.
Well, let's explain exactly how badly Porter Goss's legs are cracked, assuming he does not get this job. Number one, his budget will now be controlled by this intelligence czar.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's good.
It will also... the intelligence czar will have a role in choosing senior managers at the CIA.
Hmm.
Yeah, which means that some of Porter Goss's employees will not be chosen by, guess who? Porter Goss. That
wow.
means, essentially, he stepped into a gig that has now lost substantial and significant clout within the Bush administration.
And he thought he was going to be king. He was already having his, you know, his special jackets made, like, you know, the president has made. What's with those waist jackets? You know that the president has an entire line of apparel that apparently it's been designed for him, you know, based on, you know, previous fascist rulers, where, you know,
what?
whenever he appears in front of the military, he's got these waistcoats with epaulets and these,
oh, yeah.
you know, with just a flag patch and the sort of, you know, fascist in chief on his neocon death cult over the breast pocket.
Oh, yeah, Franco by Oscar De La Renta.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're very smart little coats, you know,
yeah.
but they're specifically for when he makes appearances, you know, for the military. You know, he puts on some sort of, you know, stylistic riff on military apparel.
Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that the same kind of outfit he was wearing when Karl Rove met him and fell in love?
Yeah, he was wearing a bomber jacket. That's right. When you read accounts of that, it reminds you just be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, because you were running across a field in slow motion.
He describes it. You know, Karl Rove's like, he had cowboy boots on. Jeans and a bomber jacket and the kind of confidence that made my testicles tickle.
See, I didn't say that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. And see, now, this is a net plus for Bush, okay? Mm-hmm. The September, the real winners are the September 11th families, several of whom we've talked to.
Yes.
The Jersey girls, and because those are the people who, against opposition from the White House, got the September 11th Commission formed in the first place and has been lobbying incessantly the halls of Congress to get this bill passed because they knew how important it is.
Well, there you go. There's the there's the facts coming in. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. As you know, every day we have your marching orders here. Today is Wednesday's marching orders. One, this holiday season, object to the term bowl full of jelly as offensive to people of size. Today's the first day of Hanukkah.
Second, yes.
Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Two, stand in front of church manger scene shouting, this is an example of the inadequate housing available for children of single parents. Three, call Afghan President Hamid Karzai. Tell him to wean Afghanistan's economy off of heroin production. They should switch to methadone production. Four, write a we're here, we're queer type of chant for every oppressed sexual minority. Find a rhyme for transgendered. Five, phrase of the day, if you do take Christ out of Christmas, you end up with mass, which in Spanish means more. That's no accident, people. Wake up, man.
In the next hour, we've got Kenneth Miller, professor of biology at Brown University. We're going to deconstruct some of this creationism stuff. We're going to deal with that when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, dreamers of dreams, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, latent haters, blog bullies, blog snots, blog babies, and blog lovers. Blog dreamers, how are you? Good morning. If you want to blog away, go to morningsedition.com. Get involved with the people there. There's some nice people there. There's a few. Yeah, if you want to email us, sedition@airamericaradio.com. Always good to hear from you. Lots of nice emails. A few really bad ones, but you know, that's good. It's good. To me, it's like I'm so codependent with the blog and the emails, Mark Riley. When I get emails, it's like a speedball. You know, I'll go through like 15 good ones, and bam, one hater, and I'll be like, ooh, there's the heart wrencher. Like you get the elation from the dopamine from all the good emails, and the ego just swells, and bam, you suck, and you're like, ow, that hurt, and the mixture with the dopamine and the heart pain, dude, it's like a speedball.
It is. Although I don't know that I know too much about what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't want to talk. We don't want to talk too much drug talk.
No, too much drug talk, man. It's all in my distant, vaporous past.
Because then you get these emails that are like, you know, you're portraying yourself exactly as they want to, as they want it to. You're falling into the trap. You're talking, you're telling your truth, your personal truth, and that's falling into the trap of what they want us to portray ourselves as.
victim speak, the victim's English. We must own ourselves, people. Hey, look, we'll be traveling up to Boston on Friday, December 10th. It's a live broadcast from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square, Somerville, right outside of Boston. It's going to be fun. We got Congressman Barney Frank coming, comedian Jimmy Tingle, musician Ted Leo, who kicks some arse.
All right.
Barry Crimmins might be coming by. No tickets are necessary. Just drop by, have some coffee. Maybe we'll give you a T-shirt. We'll hang out. We'll talk to you. If we have T-shirts, we got to do that.
While supplies last.
Yeah, Mark likes to say that. He was emphatic about that before we went on the air. You can't mislead these people and make them assume that there is a never-ending supply of free crap.
I have seen the consequence of doing
that. Why don't you share that with us, Dr. Riley?
Those of you who live in New York know about the Brooklyn Carnival on Eastern Parkway each and every Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Well, back in the day, some time ago, I had done Eastern Park, broadcaster from Eastern Parkway every year for at least 25 years.
Uh-huh.
1 year, we actually loaded up one of our vans on WLIB with swag, specifically T-shirts, drove it out to the middle of Brooklyn, got on the air, if you want a T-shirt, come on by.
Uh-huh.
Not realizing or realizing too late
how important
like
T-shirts were to
2 million people on Eastern Parkway.
Oh, man.
1 million of whom all decided they wanted a T-shirt at the same time.
People ripping your clothes off? Well, if you ain't got one for us, we're taking yours.
People tried to turn the van over. That's how bad it got.
Over T-shirts.
T-shirts.
If only we could mobilize people like that for a political reason, like to get to the bottom of election fraud. You know what I mean? But no, it's got to be about, where's my damn T-shirt?
Yeah.
We're tearing this place down. We're setting fire to this. Where's our free coaster?
Yep.
Where's our free hot cup? You know what I mean? Here we've got, we've got people that are trying to get to the bottom of election fraud and voter counts. Maybe they should give away some sort of thermos or something. Give away a hat. You know what I mean? Come and get a free hat and make all votes be counted. And then at least you get a hat that says, I tried. You know what I mean?
Well, radio is known for the art of the giveaway. I mean, everybody's got it. Some radio stations across America give away $10,000 at 7:20 every Thursday morning. Whatever.
That's right. Right.
Well, when it comes to certain things, people don't want to hear that you've run out, okay? I mean, unless you say while supplies last before you get there, they figure they show up, they're entitled to some swag. Or swag, let me say that correctly.
Yeah.
And, they get evil and ugly if there's no swag for them to partake.
Well, here, dig this. We're running out of justice in this country.
We're
giving away justice in Columbus, Ohio, this Sunday, December 12th, Ohio State House. Be there at noon for a rally and an action to guarantee that every vote be counted. Today, Howard Dean will be giving a major address. He's going to give a major address. An address today at noon Eastern Time. So you can go to www.democracyforamerica.com. To hopefully hear the future DNC chairman. Today we have Kenneth Miller, who's a professor of biology at Brown University. He's going to talk to us about the neocon death cults, Christo-fascist zombie brigades, and why they're wrong. He's not going to talk specifically about that, but he will talk about how they are wrong. And in a second, we're going to talk about the neocon death cult's judicial arm. In the way of Justice Scalia.
But before we do that, can I mourn the fact that one of our previous guests, Mary Frances Berry, the chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, has given up her gig.
Did we know that was going to happen?
We kind of anticipated it happening, but there was some talk that she might try to legally hold on to the post because, in fact, President Bush decided to appoint a black conservative from Missouri to head the U.S. Civil Rights Commission in Mary Frances Berry's place. Rather than fight with Bush and expend all these resources, she decided to quit.
So out of a nationwide search for black conservatives, out of the 30 that there are...
Yeah, out of the 30, he found one.
So here, dig this. This is President Bush's Hanukkah message. I send greetings to all those celebrating Hanukkah, the festival of lights, on the 25th day of Kislev on the Hebrew calendar. Jews around the world commemorate the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem more than 2,000 years ago. During this time of darkness, the temple had been seized and Judaism had been outlawed. Judah Maccabee and his followers fought for 3 years for their freedom and successfully recaptured Jerusalem and the temple. Jewish tradition teaches that the Maccabees fought only one small bottle of oil, found only one small bottle of oil to be used for temple rituals, but that oil lasted 8 days and nights. The miracle of this enduring light, remembered through the lighting of the menorah, the lighting
That's a lightning.
Oh, my God. It blew the roof off this place, and I can't find my yarmulke.
All right. Continues to symbolize the triumph of faith over tyranny. The bravery of the Maccabees has provided inspiration through the ages. We must remain steadfast and courageous as we seek to spread peace and freedom throughout the world. This holiday season, we give thanks to God, and we remember the brave men and women of our armed forces and their families. We also pray that all who live under oppression will see their day of freedom, and that the light of faith will always shine through the darkness. Laura joins me in wishing you a blessed, and happy Hanukkah. Now, that's the real statement. Something disturbing we found on an internet site.
Really?
Yeah, we've got the rough draft of Bush's Hanukkah speech, and I send greetings to all those celebrating Hanukkah, the festival of lights. During this time, Jews around the world, and believe me, you people are everywhere, commemorate the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem more than 2,000 years ago, when you weren't too busy torturing and killing Jesus, of course. When they recaptured the temple, the Maccabees found only one small bottle of oil to be used for temple rituals, but that oil lasted 8 days and nights. That's a nice little trick, fellas, but when we just needed oil, we rolled into a rock and took it. Should last us 20 years or so. Tradition is nice, but you got to live in the real world, people. The miracle of this enduring light continues to symbolize the triumph of faith over tyranny. It's not Christmas, but you're making it work. The lessons of Hanukkah are important to the rest of us, too. We need you people for the rapture to take place. So go ahead, enjoy your little holiday, and we'll give you a pass on the killing Jesus thing. Until Easter. Yours in Christ, George W. Bush.
Yours in Christ.
Hey, Jews, give us a call. 866-303-2270. What are you doing, Hanukkah? What do you think of our president? Where are you at? How do you feel about things? Don't make us crazy, but call us and be crazy if you want. 866-303-2270. That's an open call as well, but I'm reaching out to the Jewish people. 14th past the hour, Air America Radio.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi!
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Man, I got to call my therapist. I'm not going to be able to go tomorrow. I forgot. What's the matter? Right. What, Clutch, why are you looking at me like that? What's the problem? What did I say? Did I say something wrong? Look at him. He's looking at me like I just, like, you know, crap myself. What's going on? What are you looking at me like that for? Why are you looking at me like that? Say it. I'm doing the Dream Diary right now. I'm about to get into it. You know, if you think that John Larson runs this show, you're sadly mistaken. Because all I can say right now, I can just say, you know what, Mr. Larson, Mr. Clutch Larson, I'm not doing no Dream Diary. What do you think of that?
Okay. And I'm not... Here's my confession.
What?
I lied about the Dream Diary.
Well,
that wasn't really why I looked at you, quote, like that.
Okay,
quote.
So why did
that
you?
Was my attempt to get this show back on the rails.
Oh, I get it.
Obviously, I failed. The reason I looked at you like
that
was because I hadn't potted up the sound in the control room.
Okay.
And so for a second, I was concerned that the show wasn't going out on the air.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Wow. See, so I took it personally because that's what I do and it had nothing to do with me.
Because that's what you always do.
All right. Ooh. What does that mean? What are you talking about? What does that mean that's what I always do?
Remember how I explained that off the air, what you think you hear, no matter what I say?
Yeah.
That's what it means.
What does that mean? Oh, I get what you're doing, man. I see what you're doing in my head, man. Get out! Get out of my studio! Go back to your booth, man!
Wow, he didn't last nearly as long as Dan Pashman.
I don't understand what just happened there, but I got a feeling he rewired something in my head. He did something in my head right there. Here's my Dream Diary, just to spite him, because he said I didn't have to do it. I'm in Atlantic City at the Trump Taj Mahal Casino with Jesus. The sign out front says, Jesus is welcome, right under the sign that says, all you can eat steak and lobster buffet, $12.98. We go inside, and there are hundreds of guys wearing name tags that say, hi, my name is Jesus. There's a Jesus with a golden crown and a purple robe. There are blue-eyed Jesuses in short hair and business suits checking their Palm Pilots. There are wild-eyed Jesuses wearing camo fatigues, railing against gay marriage and abortion and liberals and hip-hop. There are quite a few black Jesuses and a group of Latino Jesuses. Their hearts were on fire, which struck me as a definite code violation. There was one married Jesus there with his wife and kids. He was telling this unruly kid, if you don't straighten up, I'll tell your grandfather. There was a Jesus with glasses talking to his mother about his dermatology practice. I figured he was the Jews for Jesus Jesus. Willem Dafoe and Max von Sydow and Jim Caviezel were in the corner chatting about who had the toughest crucifixion scene. Birkenstock Jesus had a booth selling the spring line of sandals. A couple of teenage Jesuses were having a race in the swimming pool on top of the water. I say, Jesus, what is all this? He says, everyone's got their own version of me, Mark. I'm your version. We all get together every so often and kick some ideas around. I ask, so which Jesus is the real Jesus? He says, he's the one over there sitting by himself. Most people don't want him. Too many rules, not sexy enough. I say, so all of these other Jesuses? My Jesus says, man-made, Mark. Just like the Trump Taj Mahal here. Nice to look at, but it won't get you to heaven. I hear yelling and I turn to see the corporate Jesus and the wild-eyed Jesus punching and kicking each other. I say, shouldn't we break this up? My Jesus says, nah, this happens every year. They'll get tired, eventually quit. Let's go play some pie-gal poker. I'm feeling lucky. I woke up and my bed was filled with sweet basil.
Ooh.
That was, you know what I mean? I wake up in the middle of the night sweating with this stuff, dude. Sweating.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, like, I let my cats out into the house. That's a whole new thing, but that's a whole other story. We got Jews on the phone.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Ron in Providence. What's going on, Ron?
Hey, Ron.
Ron? Don't do this to us, Ron. Are we?
Ron?
What's the matter? Is the phone not working, or did
it
we
sounds
just
to me like
him?
The phone's not working.
The phone seems dead. I don't know why. You know, maybe let's try. Should we try another line? Or are we out? Can we try Ann in Asbury Park? Are you there?
Hi, Ann. No, it's not working.
This is sad.
I can't tell. But
all
you know
these
what?
People, they call to wish us a happy Hanukkah.
I know. But you know what? While we wait, maybe this will get fixed. Maybe we should talk a little bit about Scalia, and then see if we can get back to the phone.
Okay.
Because Scalia is along the same lines.
Yeah. So we'll hold on for a minute, and we'll see if we can get these phones coming through. I'm sorry, but we were having some technical difficulties here in the studio. So yeah. Scalia basically, apparently, not very well-researched statements about the separation of church and state in reference to Hitler's Europe.
Yeah,
Hitler's Germany.
Scalia, here is a sitting justice of the Supreme Court who would form his lips to say that the separation of church and state may have actually been in part responsible for or helped facilitate the Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
What kind of nonsense is that? And by the way, you know where he said this right here in New York City, and guess who was in the audience?
Jews.
Well, yeah, among others, the Reverend James Forbes Jr. Our good friend Reverend Forbes was there.
Let's hear what he has to say. Is this on, Kalo? Can I do this? This is not Reverend Forbes the other night. This is Reverend Forbes on our show.
We better go into our values. And I don't mean two values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the broad values upon which this nation was built. And that includes care for those who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It means productivity based on regulations that are fair for all of the people. It is based on a global vision that we are the global leaders. What is our vision for the globe? And how do we manifest that in our own nature? And we're going to be discussing how do religious values stop destroying folks and actually build up community and get us ready for the mission that is ahead.
That's Reverend Forbes talking about what it is to be a liberal.
Yeah, and by the way, that was a gathering that he had, not this gathering that he attended. Now, you know who else was at this gathering? This was at the Sherith Israel Synagogue in Manhattan. The Chief Justice of the New York State, Chief Judge Judith Kay was there.
Yeah.
She's a member of that synagogue. This is an Orthodox synagogue, by the way.
Well, yeah, it seems like what he was trying to imply was that because of a separation of church and state within Germany, that you know that's what in caused the Holocaust to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was implying.
And you know, and apparently he was wrong. You know, if you read Tom Hartman's piece, which is at the Common Dreams News Center, we will have a link to it on our site eventually on Pashman's Picks. But you know, this is www.commondreams.com. Is that the truth of the matter is that there wasn't really a separation of church and state in Nazi Germany. If you read Article 1 of the decree concerning the Constitution of the German Protestant Church, this is the 14th July 1933, signed by Adolf Hitler himself, merged the German Protestant Church into the Reich and gave the Reich the legal authority to ordain priests.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either he was misinformed or his suggestion was pure propaganda, which, you know, completely discredits him, which I don't like him anyways. But then he started supporting the idea of, like, that there is an infusion of God into our government, because he made examples of, you know, in God we trust, which is on the money, which was actually put there as a disclaimer. All right? And, Also, he talks about Under God in the Pledge, which was added in the 50s, you know, as a reaction to the Red Scare.
Yeah.
And I think that they should at least change that. I've always thought that they could just add another lyric. You don't have to take it out, but maybe, you know, One Nation Under God or not. You know, with liberty and justice
with
for
liberty
some.
Liberty and justice for, yeah, just about everybody.
For a few. But now, are we getting these phones going or what, Chris? What's happening? It's still not happening? Next segment, we're going to have it fixed up? All right. So, but this is really heinous, I think.
It is heinous for a guy that may end up being the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. He would, I would think, have to recuse himself from certain arguments that come before the court after having made statements like this in public.
Well, maybe, you know, if this stuff goes down and they nominate him, maybe we can get some, you know, public action. We can get people marching if we give away hats. If we give away hats that say, you know, Scalia, go to hell. Scalia is, just a propagandist for the neocon death cult. If we can get T-shirts made, we can mobilize people.
It would be nice. I mean, I don't think this man...
Wild supplies last.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be Scalia's mantra anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get these phones up. Stay on if you can so we can figure out whether they're working or not.
Yeah, and then we're also going to be talking with Professor Kenneth Miller from Brown University. He's the author of Finding Darwin's God when we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. That's my friend Mark Riley.
Hi.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
You're okay?
Yeah.
We're going to be in Somerville, Massachusetts this Friday, just outside of Boston at the Someday Cafe, doing a live broadcast with Ted Leo, Barney Frank. They're not going to sing together. Not that I know of. You never know. Barry Crimmins might drop by. Jimmy Tingle, the comedian, is going to be there. We're going to have a great time coming down. Free T-shirts. Aha!
Yeah.
How's that grab you?
Wild supplies left!
That's it. Hey. Also, if you're in Columbus, Ohio this Sunday, go down to the State House at noon and hold hands with everybody and surround that thing and levitate it and turn it upside down and shake the ballots out of that State House.
Here we go.
We got the phones back up again. Sorry about the problem before. Thank you for all the lovely Happy Hanukkah calls that we didn't get to hear. But I knew that's what you were going to say, and I appreciate it. And they are working again. We'll take more calls later in the hour. For some reason, the entire building's technology decided to crap out on us last night, and now everything's back up and running. Kalo, of course, a genius. He is a genius. Operating like a PDQ Bach over there. All right, anyways. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternative universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, and once again, joining us now by phone from Planet Bush is correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got out a scalpel, and he's about to do a sin-ectomy.
Okay.
No anesthesia, just cut right in.
Yeah, all right, good. Yeah. That sounds great. All right, listen, buddy. Today we're going to talk about abstinence-only sex education.
Oh, Mark, please. If you're going to be a potty mouth, I'm going to have to leave.
Wait. No, I'm just talking about President Bush's enthusiastic support for programs that teach teenagers that abstinence is the only way to deal with sex. Come on.
All right. Well, Mark, for years, community and church leaders have taught us that the only way to properly enjoy sexual relations is to refrain from having it. I mean, just talking about it gives me unwholesome urges.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Is it realistic to expect teenagers to completely suppress their sexual feelings, Lawton?
Mark, our great nation was built on the suppression of sexual feelings.
Oh.
Do you think our forefathers could have slaughtered the Indians and if they'd been thinking about sex all the time?
Come on.
No, if they'd had MTV back then, we'd all be speaking Iroquois now.
What are you talking about? That's completely nuts. It's crazy. What are you talking about?
See, teenagers never used to think about sex, Mark. It was only when teachers started telling them about condoms.
Oh, my God.
That they became the sex-crazed savages that we have today.
What are you crazy? Listen, buddy, these are facts. Listen to me. These are the facts. Studies have shown that students who receive abstinence-only education show no difference in the rate of pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. All right? And there's some concern that the abstinence-only students who do end up having sex are actually less educated about how to do it safely.
Condoms.
What is wrong? The bottom line is, buddy, if we shouldn't abstain from... Look, the bottom line is, look, we should not abstain from knowledge. Ignorance is not the answer.
Well, thanks for the lecture, Dr. Kinsey.
All right. All right.
Should the teens of today be ignorant of the fact that they can get a sexually transmitted disease from sweating too much? That's completely true. Or that they can get pregnant for touching someone through their clothes.
Look, that's exactly the kind of ignorance I'm talking about.
That's
ignorance.
A fact.
It's not a fact.
Oh, really? Well, it just so happens Bill Fritz, a licensed MD, believes all those things. Now, would an actual medical doctor say it if it weren't true?
He would if that medical doctor happened to be the Senate Majority Leader and had to promote an ignorant conservative agenda in order to maintain his power, sir.
Oh, well, Mark, that is so disrespectful.
Oh, come on.
And that's just what, that's what this all comes down to is respect. Look, when I was just a freckle-faced young teen at Jefferson Davis High School, there was a young girl named Mary Lou Wilkins.
Yeah.
And I took a fancy to her.
Oh.
But do you think I was disrespectful enough to engage in filthy, liberal, unnatural, delicious sexual relations with her?
I'm guessing no.
Well, you're darn right. I was very respectful with her. So respectful, I never asked her out. I was too afraid.
Oh, no.
I want chance at happiness, and I blew it. I'll never know what it is to love and be loved. I'm so repressed. Give me strength, Lord. Harder.
Here, take it easy. All right, buddy. Pull yourself together. Pull yourself together, all right? I've been there. I know what you're saying. We've all been there, all right? Adolescent heartbreak is a very common thing, and it never really goes away. It's okay, man.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right, man. Absolutely. Most humans live their whole lives in a state of loneliness, yearning, and bitter romantic disappointment. What's up?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, condoms are bad, Mark.
Oh,
God. Tool of the devil.
All right, I thought we were... I thought we were making a breakthrough.
It's the devil's rubber.
All right. All right. We'll be right back.
God loves you.
No,
deal with it. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah. I got to go. Thank you.
All right.
See you later, Ron. Wow. Now, you know, I felt his heart there for a second, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the monster comes back. On the phone right now, joining us, professor of biology at Brown University, Finding Darwin's God is the book. He's the co-author of that. It's a leading high school biology textbook. Kenneth Miller, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
All right. Good morning.
Very well.
Would you mind very much if I corrected the introduction?
Sure. Go ahead and correct
it. Sure. Finding Darwin's God is a book on evolution and religion. It's a popular book. You can find it in bookstores, and I'm the sole author of that.
You're the author of that, but you're also co-author of a leading high school biology.
I'm also with a great guy named Joseph Levine. I'm the co-author of a leading high school biology textbook.
Now that that's straight, you can find Finding Darwin's God on our website at morningsedition.com. And now we're going to have a conversation with you, Kenneth Miller, about these. There's a lot of Christo-fascist zombies out there who are spreading the word that evolution is not a fact. It's not a scientific fact. Can you explain to us why it is a fact, please?
Oh, sure. It's a fact based on what you mean by the word evolution. And let me try to stop stuttering and explain exactly what I mean.
Okay.
That is, we often use the word evolution to refer to two different aspects or two different concepts.
Okay.
The first thing is what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, how did it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of what happened in the past, it's a fact that living things in the past were different from living things today. And it's also a fact that the farther we go into the past, the more different they become.
I can tell that with my father.
There you go.
Yeah. My father's a much different animal than me.
And that's a fact. In other words, it's a fact that the life of the past changed or evolved into the life of the present. That's a fact that's been understood for 200 years, 50 years before Charles Darwin wrote The Origin of Species. Geologists had already figured out that there was a whole series of geological ages which were characterized by different forms of living things, and these things had changed into the present. In that respect, evolution, namely that the organisms and the life of the past evolved or changed into the life of the present, that's as much of a fact as anything else we know in science.
So why, and then what about these people, these intelligent design folks who insist, and they use the word theory, which is not, the definition of a theory is not the same in regular language as a scientific language, yes?
Oh, absolutely, that's correct. I mean, the common use of the word theory is, I used to have a theory why the Boston Red Sox would never win the World Series.
Uh-huh.
That theory was proven wrong this year, thank goodness. But But the that common meaning is like a guess, a hunch. You know, I have a theory as to where would be the best place to go for lunch or something
right.
like that. But in science, the word theory doesn't mean that. The word theory is a system of explanation that's supported by fact and helps to explain facts. The best way to describe it is it's not as though a theory is something we're not sure of, that if we get a lot of evidence will eventually become a fact.
Right.
It's actually the other way around. Theory is a higher level of understanding than facts because theories explain facts.
Well, that's where you're losing most of the people that are assuming that theory means speculation.
Yeah, there's another way to put it, though. And that is people will often ask me, isn't evolution just a theory? And I would say, yeah, it is. Just like the atomic theory of matter or the germ theory of disease or the Copernican theory of the solar system.
Well, thank God gravity's a law.
Right. Professor Kenneth Miller, next month there are going to be children in Dover, Pennsylvania, who will be the first in the country to learn intelligent design along with evolution in a public school. Is there anything wrong with it? Can intelligent design and evolution coexist in the same curriculum?
Well, they can certainly coexist, but the problem is that it's not a question of intelligent design and evolution. It's a question of intelligent design and science. This simply isn't science. Intelligent design is essentially an explanation that looks at every single thing in the past and puts a little stamp on it and says the designer did it. And they're very, very careful to use the word design or designer because they don't want to use the word God. And, you know, a scientific explanation that every time you look at something, any change that occurred in the past, any new organism that appeared, you simply put a stamp on it and said, God did it, God did it, God did it, God did it. Not only is it not science, but it's also enormously disrespectful of religion because it takes religion and it basically makes it a scientific explanation and an explanation that has to retreat every single time science makes a new discovery, which happens all the time in the field of evolution.
Can't God and science coexist, my friends?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, one of the things, I don't make a big deal out of this in the classroom, but I certainly do when I go out and I talk to people.
Why don't you make a big deal in the classroom? You might lose your job?
Oh, no, not at all. I would never lose my job over something like this. I teach at Brown University, which is a private university founded, incidentally, by the Baptist Church. We have lots of mention of religion in all sorts of classes.
Well, that's a high-end institution there. If you were teaching, elementary or junior high school students in Cobb County, Georgia, you might lose your job over something like this.
Well, you very well might. But here's the, here's essentially the point.
Okay.
And that is that the best-kept secret of this so-called controversy is that mainstream religions made their peace with evolution hundreds of years ago. I'm a Roman Catholic, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And not only has the current Pope, about 6 years ago, spoken out very clearly that evolution doesn't present a threat to religion, but Pope Pius XII in 1947 wrote an explanation basically saying that the Church doesn't necessarily have a problem with evolution. And if you look around, for example, at Catholic colleges and even Baptist colleges and other places around the United States, you will find some very, very distinguished evolutionary biologists working and teaching at these universities. So can they coexist? The answer is absolutely yes.
Okay, well, yeah, thanks for joining us, Kenneth Miller. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Talking to you. Finding Darwin's God is his book. You can get that at morningsedition.com at a discount. He was also the co-author of a leading high school biology text. We'll be back. Let's try this call thing again because the lines are up, 866-303-2270. If you want to pipe in about evolution, if you want to wish us a happy Hanukkah, we're open to that. Anything you want to talk about, it's 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Wow, man, that guy could play guitar. 51 past the hour, Mark Maron here. Mark Riley there.
Hi.
You guys on the phone in front of me. I can see it. I can see the flashing lights. It means it's time to take some calls, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's talk to some people. What do you got there, Brian, in Columbus, Ohio, listening to WTPO?
TPG.
TPG. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, guys. Happy Hanukkah.
Hey, thank you very much.
Hey, I was just calling. I'm a Christian.
Uh-huh.
I do believe in evolution as far as within species. I think it's scientific fact that species do evolve within their own species. They evolve and adapt and that kind of thing. I do not believe that macro evolution that species change in eventually to another species.
Okay.
And I think the microevolution, which is within species, which is pretty much scientific fact and there's evidence all around,
yeah.
does not conflict with the Bible. When you say, well, when someone says that we evolved from apes or that, that's still going on, that does conflict with the Bible, and I don't think those two coincide. But
yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think that, you know, in a couple hundred years, because of all the toxins in the environment, I think we will definitely be different animals eventually. But
yeah.
we're not going to be around to see that. But I understand what you're saying. You don't believe that we evolved from apes. You just believe
what I think. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, no.
What I think is very cool, whether you believe in evolution or God, that we've got to, we can all agree that there's this planet here, and somehow or another, it was always here, or something that created it was always here. Either the two, evolution and the creationism theory, the Big Bang theory, all of those take a great amount of faith. And I think as long as we're on all sides, if we can just look at the facts and understand that there is a lot of gray area, and it's a miraculous, incredible thing at some level, all
yeah.
of it is.
Right.
Because it can't be recreated in by empirical evidence in a laboratory. So it all takes faith, and I think it's just looking around the evidence of what's going on.
Yeah.
I think there is so much evidence of intelligent design. I know you might not care for that term, but just in all of creation, there is
evidence of
intelligent design that, I don't know.
Well,
it's
right. evidence, but also, like, if you do the research, it's not, it can be definitely rationally explained.
Well, you know what? He's
what?
Giving me the solution to all
what's
this.
What's that?
Brian gave me the solution.
Right.
God.
Yeah.
Evolved.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's all we
I
need.
I don't know, man. I still think
God evolved.
It could be all explained. God is evolving.
God
yeah.
is evolving.
I don't know, man. Sounds crazy.
Is
John,
you?
Colorado Springs. What's going on? Am I talking to John?
Yes, you are.
What's up,
hey?
Buddy?
Well, we've been dealing with this in Colorado Springs forever because we have Focus on the Family here.
Oh man.
The PTA meetings you go to, and I've been for years. I've been going. How can you people actually believe this stuff? I mean, it's just amazing. Fossils. Oh, God put the fossils there. Okay. I mean, so it's nothing new to me here, but I can't believe in this time that we're talking about this.
Isn't that unbelievable? And the weird thing is real Republicans believe in evolution. They believe that poor, stupid people will adapt to whatever they put them through.
Oh, yeah.
But you know the real reason why we're talking about this now in 2004, John?
I'm clueless.
Money. Money. This is
what?
About money. Textbooks that will give room to intelligent design will start making money if local school boards begin to open up room enough for them to be in the schools with the other textbooks.
Yeah, that's what they wanted to teach that as a class.
Yeah, exactly. In order to teach it in a class, you need a textbook.
Yes, you do.
And that means that some publisher, some Christian right-wing publisher, will get rich supplying these various school systems that have made room for this in their curriculum. They will get rich.
This is an unbelievable city we live in. Focus on the Family. The most popular bumper sticker here is Focus on Your Own Family, and that's what I wish they'd do.
Thank you very much, John. Now, wait a minute, Riley. I got to disagree with the follow the money theory, because I think what they're trying to do is redefine the ideology of the country. I mean,
that too, but still, there is a financial reward for doing so.
I know, but they're trying to get existing textbooks changed. They're trying to pull the textbooks that have the proper information out of the schools. Now, if that's just some
more
sort of
room and more money for them.
Yeah, I know, but I think it's more insidious than that. I don't think
money
it's that
is insidious,
simple.
Trust me.
No, but I mean, I tend to think that, you know, these people ideologically really want to impose their morality on everybody in a very earnest way. And if the people that are making money off of textbooks, that, again, not unlike the Republicans, they're using these, you know, the neocon death cults, you know, crypto fascist zombie brigade mm-hmm. to mobilize their policy, their ideology, and their marketing ideas, if that's what you're talking about. But I think who's being exploited here are dumb, you know, narrow-minded people that, you know, are not behaving necessarily in a Christian way and cannot live in a world that they see as immoral to them, and they won't be happy to
I'm not disagreeing with you one bit, but
yeah.
I know that the book textbook publishing industry in this country for school kids, not higher education, just schools, it is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, I know, and part of them are old friends of the Bush family, the Macmillan Company.
There you go.
And, you know, I understand all that, but it still, it goes in, I guess what we're sort of meeting in the middle on this. And that guy from Ohio was, you know, that guy was out of his mind because he's one of those guys that starts out by saying he believes in science, and then because his brain cannot accommodate the vastness of things that have been explained by science, he just dismisses it as, you got to see it as a miracle. Or you don't, or you got to see it as something that can be explained by, you know, whatever branch of science explains it. Anyways, Maura in New Jersey, how are you? WLIB.
Hi, Maura.
Very well, and you stole a bit of my thunder because I had to call you after hearing that person from Ohio.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. No disrespect to people of faith, but I had always learned, and I'm a lapsed Catholic, I have nothing against anyone, but God gave us a brain.
Yeah.
God gave us a brain to find things out. For example, most of us have found and read that we evolved from some kind of primordial goo.
Right.
Everybody came from the same cell.
Yeah.
Apes, chinchillas, humans, everyone. And the bottom line is evolution is not a theory, it's a fact. And the sooner that people couch it in things that are more palatable to people of faith, you know, if that's the way it has to be, sugar-coated, great.
Right.
But if not, you got to teach your
call it what it is. Yeah, fact-based education is what we're fighting for. Thank you,
Maura.
There
you go.
Yeah, she's absolutely right.
Yeah, she is.
I guess that's all for the calls for now. Thank you very much for piping in. We appreciate talking to you, Riley.
Yeah, we got
to
get some more Hanukkah calls in before the end of the show today.
Okay.
Coming up, James Walker, Vanity Fair's contributing editor, checks in with his media criticisms for the week when we come back here on Air America Radio.
And it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah, that's it. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, latent haters, liberal fascists, conservatives. Oh, he is. Good morning to you. It's Wednesday, and it's been pretty good, Riley. I've had a good morning. Have you?
Yes, I have.
I hope you're having a good morning out there. You know, I don't know why, as I was saying to Riley earlier, today I just, like, the last 2 days I've been in and out, but today I'm just all juiced up. Maybe it's just a bipolarity. Maybe it's just a good morning. I don't know.
It's a good morning, man. Happy Hanukkah, by the way, to Mark Maron, all our listeners that are celebrating the holiday.
Even if you're not Jewish and you're celebrating Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah to you, too. I don't even know what that means. What does that even mean, man?
Well, you know, there's some people who want to be Jewish.
Oh, who are married to Jews.
Who are married to Jews or who want to themselves become Jewish.
Yeah, they have a little menorah downstairs in the building.
Oh, yeah. My daughter, because she goes to a school that has a lot of
go ahead, say it, Jews.
I can't. Jewish children.
What did your dad tell you? You were a Jewish people.
No, that was my mother. My mother, who, by the way, enforced this with beatings, told me I could not refer to Jews as Jews. Mm-hmm. They must be referred to as the Jewish people.
Yeah, a lot of people believe Jew is derogatory.
Yeah.
It's said with the wrong intonation?
Yeah.
Like, you could say...
And it was definitely wrong if you used it as a verb.
Yeah. Jew down.
Yeah, yeah,
that's bad.
Yeah, that would get me smacked in a minute. I never said that.
I guess it is sort of hard to say Jew without a derogatory sort of thing. Like, I'm a Jew. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that, if you go, he's a Jew, that's different. See, it's really about tone.
It's a whole different thing, right?
Let's get into some of this because we haven't covered this at all. Let's talk a little bit about the 1,000th American soldier killed in combat yesterday.
Yes.
Which is a very sad landmark, a sad milestone, I guess, is what that would be. And our you know, faux Christian, you know, ex-blow monkey, AWOL president, puppet of the neocon death cult, was in front of the military yesterday. In
Camp
his,
Pendleton.
Yeah, in his, like, you know, newly designed fascist waistcoat with epaulettes and the little the American flag patch and the neocon death cult insignia on the pocket, speaking to these guys. And, you know, and Iraq is out of control from all reports that we get, you know, not in being disrespectful of the troops in any way. But, I mean, this is a war that we were dragged into by a selfish administration.
Not only a selfish administration, Mark Maron, we are in a situation now where this war really doesn't seem to have an end, short of America simply pulling out maybe a couple of days after the January 30th election day. And the question of whether or not these elections will be free and fair is still an open one. Now, mind you, the Americans jumped into the middle of the Ukrainian elections, right?
Yeah.
Saying, well, hey, they were fraudulent, okay? At the same time, the same administration says, well, if the Sunnis don't end up voting in Iraq, that's okay. Or if there are certain cities, like maybe Mosul or maybe Fallujah, that are too violent or too dangerous for people to vote, that's okay if they're disenfranchised. Now, how do you reconcile it? How do you reconcile calling one country's elections fraudulent because people supposedly, you know, mess with the ballots or whatever, and then saying that an election where a good part of the population, 25, 26% of the population, is not going to participate, that's a fair election.
Well, they don't care if the election's a sham, if it works to their benefit, if they can get out. I mean, look at this country. I mean, there's plenty of people that are still, you know, worked up and aggravated, rightfully so, about the voting tabulations, about voting machines. You know, we've talked about it here. Gerald Nadler in Congress is trying to do something about it. There's a protest this Sunday at the Ohio State House at noon. You know, it's like, it's really a matter, and the reason why the national media and our president doesn't acknowledge any of this, and shamefully so, that John Kerry doesn't take a leadership thing in this, is because it's business as usual for these guys. It works to their benefit. They're more self-involved, certainly the Democrats who aren't doing anything about it. And I think it goes the same with any other election. The Ukrainian election becomes an issue because, you know, we want to, you know, support
Yushchenko.
Yeah. And then in the Iraqi election, it's the same thing. We want to get out, so it serves our interest to get this thing done with.
Get this thing done with. Get Alawi elected, because that's who we installed in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And then, pull up stakes and leave. And part of the reason why the get out scenario seems to be getting a lot of currency is because, Mark, I believe there is a lot of, I won't say unrest, but there's a lot of unhappiness among the U.S. troops now who are finding themselves deployed for much longer periods of time than they were originally told. People are going to court. One guy here in New York ended up not having to be redeployed because he threatened to go to court, and the Army gave him an honorable discharge.
And there are guys that thought they were out, and under some clause they get sucked back in,
yes,
and they got no control over it. I mean,
yep,
they tried to redraft Kerry.
And see, now, you know, you now look at what's going on in Iraq as the 1,000th combat death takes place. And what's the Iraqi government saying? That the Syrians and the Iranians and their immediate neighbors have not done enough to stop the influx of foreign fighters. Well, duh, that's been going on for the last year.
And what about the borders? Why haven't the U.S. military sort of monitored these borders more effectively?
Because they need 350,000 troops to do it right. That's why.
So Shinseki was right.
Yes, Shinseki was right. And now they've got the same, you know, not the same. Actually, I guess it's not inaccurate to say almost the same 150,000 troops that they've had for some time. And they're not going to be able to pull these people out unless there is a wholesale pullout after the election. In other words, George W. Bush declares victory and sends the troops home.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to see all the American troops home,
mm-hmm,
okay? I just feel bad that, you know, we've left that country, we will have left that country in a complete shambles.
And possibly civil war.
Possibly civil war, and very little of the infrastructure repair and restoration that America promised when it invaded has taken place. And don't think for a minute it's going to happen before the election.
I wonder what's going to happen if we do pull out after the election. I really am curious about how, you know, these liars handle this thing.
Well, see, there are a lot of potential scenarios. There is, you know, there's the Sunni triangle,
mm-hmm,
and whether they're going to feel like they'll be an oppressed minority in the event the Shiites win an election. There's still the question of the Kurds,
mm-hmm,
and what, you know, because the Shiites apparently have made a deal with the Kurds for some level of semi-autonomy should the Shiites win the election. But remember that not all the Shiites are united either. There are different factions of the Shiites that are even planning on contesting the election.
Wow.
It is a very, very ugly situation. And, you know, it would be nice if somebody in the Bush administration, somebody in the U.S. military would be straight, not just with the American people, but specifically with the troops that are over there and that are doing the heavy lifting, doing the hard work.
Yeah, well, what are they going to say to them? Look, this is a very, you know, ambitious business venture that failed. What are they going to say?
If they were honest, yeah, that is exactly what they'd say, because it has failed. And that's the thing. I mean, you got a colonel quoted in the paper here. They have an operation where they arrested several people. They don't say how many, who are described as suspected senior transnational terrorists. This was in a raid that took place Monday night in Baghdad. Okay.
Right.
And Colonel Robert Abrams, the commander of the 1st Cavalry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team, says, quote, this operation put a serious dent in the transnational terrorism in Baghdad. Those are the same foreign fighters that the Iraqis are complaining about. This wouldn't put a dent in anything.
Wow.
If they had put a dent in something, don't you think they'd have given you a specific number of people they arrested?
Yeah, it's the whole thing just, it becomes this sort of never, it's like, it really is a traditional, or sort of a classic quagmire. You
yeah.
know, I just feel that there, it's a dark hole, we keep getting sucked deeper into it, you know, and George Bush and the neocon death cult continue to pay lip service to how winnable it is and how determined we are, and yet there is all this dissent, you know, within the military, within the American people, and you know, it's just, it starts, it causes sort of a cultural heartache. You know, that,
yeah.
that it's just horrible. When we come back, we're going to start talking a little bit about the FCC and about, you know, Christian propagandists who are trying to redefine the way that we receive television, movies, books, everything. This is, a minority in this country that's taken a tremendous amount of control in local government and actually mobilized a lot of people to push send. But, you know, there, but you know what? There is a fallacy there, and there is a myth going on, and we will shake a little of that out in the next segment, and also with our guest James Walcott later in this hour. It's 15 past the hour. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's not Marxism. It's Marxism. Mark Maron and Mark Riley every morning on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Right now, this came in earlier. Ray Ray came in a, for some reason, wearing a judicial gown. And then when I got the Palm Pilot, I realized this is Antonin Scalia's schedule for today. 6 a.m., wake up, morning confession. Forgive me, Founding Fathers, for I have sinned. 8 a.m., participate in living nativity scene on steps of Supreme Court. Cast, Thomas is Joseph, Sandra is Mary, I will be all three wise men. Note, what do we do with Ginsburg? Will she fit in the manger? 10 a.m., if selected, look into getting a Pope hat for Chief Justice Scalia. 11 a.m., approved secret plan to install giant Ten Commandments monument. Note, must be large enough to obscure FDR Memorial. 3 p.m., new things to blame on separation of church and state, internet pop-ups, cat dander, the death of scripted television. Yeah. 4 p.m., must change pagan Indian state names, i.e. Massachusetts to Deuteronomy, Iowa to Leviticus, Idaho to Second Chronicles, etc. 8 p.m., check rapture kit, Bible, check, 38 pistol, check, $200 in gold coin, check, bottled water, check, unibrow tweezers, check, letter of introduction from Billy Graham, check. We will be in Boston, in the Boston area anyways. This Friday we'll be up in Somerville, December 10th, for a live broadcast from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square. Our guests are going to be Barney Frank, the congressman, Jimmy Dingle, the comedian, Ted Leo, the musician, and Barry Crimmins, the writer. There are no tickets necessary. Drop by, have some coffee. Maybe we'll give you a T-shirt or a keychain or something, a button. Who knows?
While supplies last.
That's right. We don't want no trouble.
That's right.
We don't want no trouble. We don't want no one to get hurt. And Friday night, I will be performing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square as part of the Ding Ho Reunion, 25 years of the best of Boston comedy. Did a couple of open mics there when they were closing down. I go way back. Back in the day, back in my day, Mark. Right?
All right.
That's what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's what, late 70s?
No. Mid-80s. Howard Dean will be giving a major address today at noon Eastern Time. Go to www.democracyforamerica.com to view the webcast. Always invigorating and enlightening and energizing Howard Dean, hopefully the future DNC chairman. Right?
Yes.
That's what I want. Also, what else? Today, no, Sunday, December 12th, Ohio State House at noon. Please go and rally. Do not, we want every vote counted. We'd like to get everyone to hold hands around that State House and actually levitate it, turn it upside down, shake it so the truth comes out.
Camera. All those provisional ballots come out.
Yeah, powerful. So look at this. Dig this. I love this thing, Riley. After the FCC cited 159 public complaints in its legal case against Fox for the show Married by America, a Freedom of Information request showed that there were actually only 90 complaints written by 23 individuals. Of those 23, all but two were identical repetitions of a form letter posted by the Parents Television Council. That's that guy Brent, what's his name?
Brent Rozell.
That douchebag.
Now, you know what's funny about this?
What?
Monday.
Yeah.
We're going to have the guy who actually filed that Freedom of Information request.
Well, dig this. In other words, in that Freedom of Information request, the total actual distinct complaints that caused all this to do about Married by America was three.
Three.
Three. See how that works? See how forwarding works? See how these bastards do it? This what's the name of that other group? The Parents Television Council?
Yeah, that's PTC. Good. They're the ones.
What they do is like, I have a problem with this in general, is that political action does not mean pressing send. It doesn't just mean that. It doesn't mean signing something that you didn't read and moving it on. You know, there's an intimacy involved in it. Something that's a lot more powerful is that when people had minds and they didn't turn themselves over, their brains over, their ideologies over, to the machines that represent the propaganda outlets of whatever they believe in, you know, people wrote letters. People got up and went places, you know. I think this happens all the time. I get petitions all the time. Sometimes I sign them, sometimes I don't. But rarely do I actually sign one by hand. Rarely do I write a letter myself and put it in the mailbox.
These people have organized this over time, and the Internet has become, I guess, for them, their best tool.
But dig this, man. The number of indecency complaints has soared dramatically, okay, to more than 240,000 in the previous year. All right, this is what Powell said. The figure was up from roughly 14,000 in 2002 and from fewer than 350 in each of the two previous years. It's completely hinging on the Internet. There's no way to tell how many, you know, people, you know, do it twice or get their family to do it or nobody actually reads what they're sending out. It shouldn't have a bearing on things. I hate the fact that Powell buckles to these dummies.
Well, according to Media Week, where this article, which is called Activists Dominate Content Complaints, 99.8% of all indecency complaints were filed by the Parents Television Council.
99. So this is one group. This is how it works. This is also the outrage that, you know, the entire country should be feeling about the minority of people that are Christian propagandists who are trying to define the morality of everybody. You know what I mean? It's like, it's mind-blowing that they have this powerful of a machine, but they do, because they're mobilized by delusion, they're mobilized by lack of employment due to Republican policy, and they're mobilized by just being the sort of, you know, they are self-aware, you know, Christo-fascist zombies.
But you know what? You can't let Michael Powell off the hook for this either, because Michael Powell now goes around telling America, well, look at this gigantic spike in the number of complaints we've had. And then when you realize that these complaints are essentially form letters sent over the Internet, I mean, he doesn't tell anybody that part. All he says is, well, it's gone from 14,000 to 240,000. So he wants people to believe that there is really a broad-based sentiment in this country against certain kinds of programming. Now, the bottom line, he says, and this is a quote in an op-ed piece in last Friday's New York Times. Quote, advocacy groups do generate many complaints, as our critics note, but that's not unusual in today's Internet world. That fact does not minimize the merits of the group's concerns.
Right.
But see, when you go out and tell people that that the number of complaints have increased so geometrically without saying that almost all of them come from one organization, you're not even being disingenuous. You're lying to people.
Right. And what is Powell? I mean, I can't wrap my brain around this sometimes. What does Powell stand to gain? Is this political ambition? Whose ass is he kissing and why?
He's towing the line. On the one hand, he toes the line of big corporate media. Okay, he's got no problem with big corporate media.
But this doesn't represent a large group of watchers or consumers of big corporate media. It doesn't represent that if these facts are true.
No, it doesn't. But the FCC does have to look into complaints when they are filed.
Okay, but that's, I feel like if he knows that there is actually three people and not 2,000, I just don't understand whose ass he's kissing and why, unless he's looking to get somewhere else in this administration or in this government or this climate, which is obviously what it is. Let's ask Jim Walcott about it.
Yeah, he'll be coming in here in just a moment. Of course, we've also got the liberal agenda here on Air America Radio. Stay with us.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's it, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
You doing all right, Mark?
Doing all right.
All right. Yeah. You're listening to Air America Radio. A couple of quick bits. We're going to be up in Somerville, Massachusetts on Friday, this Friday, December 10th. Live broadcast. We're going to have Congressman Barney Frank, comedian Jimmy Tingle, music by Ted Leo, Barry Crimmins, the writer, will be there. No tickets are necessary. Just stop by, have a cup of coffee, say hello, get a T-shirt if we got some left, maybe a keychain, who knows what. Just come on by. I'll be at Maxwell's on Saturday night, opening for Yolo Tango. That's in New Jersey, www.maxwellsnewjersey.com. MaxwellsNJ.com. December 12th, this Sunday, Ohio State House. Go hold hands, surround that State House, levitate it, turn it upside down. Let's see if we can shake the truth out of it. What do you think?
I'm down.
All right, good. Right now, in the studio, Vanity Fair's contributing editor. He's also the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, a great book, a compilation of his writings. You can get that at morningsedition.com for a discount. James Walcott is here. I call you Jim. Is that right, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because that's when I met you a few years back.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Jim. So, Jim, help us out here. We're trying to figure out what the hell this Powell guy is up to and why.
Well, I think he's got a political, he may have political ambitions, but I also think that he loves being the center of attention.
Uh-huh.
He loves the fact that everyone waits to see what he will do. You know, will he levy a big fine? Will he give a press conference? You know, when will he come in? It's sort of like the way that people like, you know, a George Steinbrenner.
Mm-hmm.
Steinbrenner knows that the reporters are waiting for him to explode if the Yankees have a losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
For example, during the whole thing about Saving Private Ryan, when stations didn't run it for fear of what could happen, he could have preempted that. He could have come out and said, well, this is a very serious motion picture, and frankly, I don't see any real problems with this picture if... You know, they're told in advance it has graphic language and violence. He didn't do that. He let it hang in the air. And I think he likes to do that. I think he really likes being the center of attention, having people attend to him.
Playing games with our head?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But why is he, you know, consistently pandering to this sort of, you know, over-the-top minority of close-minded people that want to define the morality of the country?
Well, because I think he knows that makes people happy in the Bush administration.
Okay, so he is kissing the
administration. Yeah, he is doing that, and I think he does it. But I also think that he's got just a personal narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think is going to be interesting to see is I see the right wing already beginning to beat the tom-toms on this, and it's about the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And if Michael Moore's movie gets nominated for Best Picture, I've already seen Michael Medved on TV getting worked up about this.
Really? And
really?
What's the angle?
Well, the angle is this is Hollywood's way of sticking it to Bush and the red states.
Oh, man.
They couldn't win the election, so they're going to nominate Michael Moore. And, of course, the other thing they're going to compare it to is how many nominations Mel Gibson gets
from
The Passion.
For The Passion, yeah.
Because they want to make the case of Hollywood is heathen. Heathen and anti-American. And they don't really honor Christians. So I've already seen them begin, because the nominations, it's all in the works now. They're beginning to get worked up. It's part of the whole thing with the culture war.
What is it with that, you know, honor? Why do they think Mel Gibson honored Christians? This guy made $500 million on Christ's Back. You know, he made a mediocre movie that was, you know, basically just a torture movie that didn't deal with the teachings of Christ. I don't understand how they validate that as being worthy or moral.
Well, I think it's because the movie was sold through Christian groups and Christian churches.
But that means screwed by Mel Gibson's company, just like they're screwed by their pastors.
But what I think is so funny about Michael Medved is he's the opposite of Brent Bazell, because Brent Bazell's always angry. he's like the handyman on The Simpsons. You know, he's always upset. But Michael Medved, he has that kind of pained, constipated look, like... he goes, I know that a lot of people in Hollywood, they say they think The Passion might have been anti-Semitic,
But I really think it's because they don't really, you know, honor Christianity. And so he does it as if he doesn't really want to say these things. He's come to this reluctant conclusion.
Yeah.
The
weird thing is, though, Jim, is it's like, you know, what does the media look like to these people? I don't understand. You know, they ran Stern off the air in the year. What do they want? What does it look like to them? I mean, we got an awful lot of channels to fill, and arguably it's filled with crap to begin with. I can't even imagine the type of crap it would be filled if these guys had their way.
Well, I think I don't even know how much of the media they actually watch. I mean, because a lot of their complaints, you'll realize, are about things they haven't seen. Mm. Often it's about things that haven't even come out yet. And they're upset about things in advance. Mm. You know, so they're laying the groundwork. I mean, I think they just use the media. I don't even know how much they actually watch.
You mean this is a matter of I haven't seen it, but I know I don't like it?
Well, you know, it's classic. You know, the person who does this all the time is Pat Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would say things like, no, I mean, I've only seen a couple of the Robert Mapplethorpe photographs, but I know that we don't want that such and such. Or when Rudy Giuliani led the attack against the Brooklyn Museum over the Sensation Show, he hadn't seen the artwork, but he knew this was a good situation to exploit. You know,
he knew somehow in his moral framework that a Madonna made out of elephant poop cannot really.
Well, and really, how many of these people who complain about Fahrenheit 9/11? How many of them actually saw it?
Right.
That's very interesting. You know, Jim Walker, there's something else that bothers me about this. There is at some point a disconnect between what many of these organizations, like the Parents Television Council and others, say they want,
mm-hmm.
and what the American people, rightly or wrongly, actually want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you look at the ratings for Desperate Housewives, if you look at how many people, you know, avail themselves of pornography in this country, there seems to be this divide between what people say they want and what people actually consume.
Mm-hmm.
Can the culture wars ever be won until that divide is reconciled?
No, and the thing is, I don't think it'll be won by the right because there's too much money on the other side. The fact is, Rupert Murdoch, for example, Time Warner, they all run these pay-per-view movie channels.
Yes.
And a lot of that money comes from pornography. They run a lot of I don't know what DirecTV is like, the satellite, but I know Time Warner, you know, they have pay-per-view things. They make a lot of money on that.
Mm.
And they're not going to surrender that. Look at HBO and The Sopranos. I mean, at what point will Michael Powell or somebody say, oh, you know that language on The Sopranos, or the brutality against women is just insupportable? If that happens, you're going to have a lot of people going, oh, wait a minute, now wait. You start messing with The Sopranos.
Yeah. That's true. These guys, they play both sides. And the only people that seem to be at being used by this are both these Christian propagandists and also us who gets worked up about it. Because the real money, and these people, a lot of them, are Republicans. You know, they're just playing both sides. They're just making a buck. They don't care.
Yeah, well, look, if you look at what the Fox Entertainment shows, you know, shows like Nip Tuck and things like that, these are very graphic, raunchy shows. But at the same time, Fox News, you know, and actually some people have pointed this out, Fox News loves to have porno stars on, even if they're complaining about the moral. But they love it. And in fact, Jenna Jameson, her memoir came out, published by HarperCollins, which is owned by Murdoch. It's part of the Murdoch thing. But Jenna Jameson would be on the Fox News shows.
Yeah.
You know, but these are the
it's
same
symmetrical.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? What do you make of the pornification of culture right now? Because it just seems that, like, when I was younger, strippers and porn was still sort of esoteric. But now it's very mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of resistance to it. Is that just a marketing thing? Is it just you know, do you see something deeper?
Well, I think it's because it is now so pervasive, but also some of the porn stars, they learned how to package their stories as, I came up through a very abusive background.
Sure.
But I used that.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And damn, I'm good.
I'm good. Well, you know, the thing was, I was molested by an uncle. And now I have sex with men on the set, and somehow I'm empowered.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so they learn how to package their story, but also it's also just the nature of the media. When I was growing up, there were no DVDs. There was no cable porn. There was none of that.
And then once
you really
it
had to look for it.
You had to. Yeah. It was really Playboy, and then a little bit later, Penthouse.
Then the creepy kid whose uncle had something.
Oh, yeah. You know, there was always things in drawers.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, now apparently they have these big box retail stores off interstates all over the country, and particularly they target rural areas where there's no laws on the books against these
porno stores.
Porn
Walmarts.
Well, remember the guy who was taking photographs of the license plates outside of them? I thought, he's going to die. He's going to get shot.
We're going to be back with Jim Walcott. We're going to try and address, you know, the shakeups at the news, on news shows at the major networks and see what we come up with that. We're talking to Jim Walcott. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. It's more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com when you get to work, courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour, coming in for landing here on Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
We are in conversation now with Jim Walcott, who's in the studio. His book is, let me make sure I get it all right, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants. You can get it through our website at morningsedition.com. He's a contributing editor for Vanity Fair. And we just had a very pleasant off-mic conversation about Annie Sprinkle and the nature of porn. But now we're getting to the news.
Yeah.
Apparently, reporters have ranked very low on a Gallup poll of people who are truthful. And that's interesting. Like, you know, TV reporters are a little higher on this ranking than newspaper reporters. But what is happening with the nature of reporting and integrity in the changing of the guard at CBS and NBC and this idea that Brian Williams is now being encouraged to be funny, you know, as the news anchor? What's going on with this stuff?
Well, they're trying to personalize everything. You know, CNN, for example, the new guy who took over CNN said he wants the inner personality of these people to come out. And you realize, of course, there is no inner personality of Wolf Blitzer. I mean, who are we kidding? I mean, he's a robot. And in fact, you know, even in the comedy, they do little comedy promos now.
I saw those.
Yeah, and they're very deadpan. Some of them are well done. They're very deadpan. But you actually don't know anything more about the anchors.
Only Lou Dobbs is the guy that he's all riled up. I'm not saying I like him, but he's got a little personality.
Yeah, he's riled up. But yeah. But Wolf Blitzer, the others...
Anderson Cooper, what's going on there?
Well, you know, I like Anderson Cooper, but he's very suave. He's very debonair, you know.
I used to be suave and debonair.
That was in the 80s.
Oh, and we saw pictures on the website.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, listen, I got to ask you this, because, you know, we've also been seeing all of this turmoil. You know, Brokaw's gone, Rather getting ready to go. And there are some people who say that network news, as we now know it, is going with this last generation of anchors. True or false?
Well, I think it's going to continue to erode, but there is still a prestige attached to it. There's still something to it on the big events,
right?
You know, that you want your anchor there. You want your big guy there. I mean, the audience is eroding, but it's still a bigger audience than most of the cable shows get. And these people do become stars, and then they head up their specials and things like that. I mean, one of the things I found absurd about Brian Williams is they're really packaging him as the NASCAR guy. You know, I mean, he's a NASCAR fan, and, you know, the notion that he's going to appeal to the red states, he's not some, you know, East Coast elitist. But the other thing is they do the ads now that really tie in with the Bush administration, because the ads for Brian Williams are, he says, the question that the broadcast has to answer every night is the world safe? Is my country safe?
Oh,
is my family safe? And this whole notion of safe, as if we should all be quivering, and, you know, and they raise it like with Bernard Kerik. Will Bernard Kerik keep us safe? As if one guy is out there standing between us and Al Qaeda and all our enemies.
Well, there is. Just ask him. Bernie Kerik will tell you he's that guy.
One Giuliani lackey with no hair standing between us and Al Qaeda.
You know, well, but, you know, the thing is, for example, if you think back on the network news, no one ever thought that, you know, Cronkite's job was to say, we're safe tonight.
Tell us the truth.
Yeah, tell us the truth. Tell us what's going on. Instead, it's like, and they use it not just with terrorists, but with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is our food safe?
Yeah.
Is what it's in our medicine cabinet safe? And so, you know, and actually Michael Moore does a very good job of this in his film, showing how that all those micro fears, that whole climate of fear about everything, then gets mobilized in time of war into one big fear. You know, to keep us anxious all the time.
Well, it's depleting us. It's a, you know, there's a, such a constant pulse of cortisol going through our veins because we're all in a constant state of anxiety that eventually you sort of snap into a zombie-like state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think fear is like one of the most, you know, fear can mobilize any sort of horror.
And see, what the Anchorman's role is, his job is to bring up those anxieties and fears and then use that kind of paternal, calming voice to say, but for now, everything's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there are rumors of dangerous developments in the Mideast. But we are told that blah, blah, blah. And then he'll calm it. But then the next broadcast, they raise it up again.
Right.
It's this constant raising and lowering.
New day, new fear.
Stay with us.
Tom Bridge and those terror alerts, remember them?
Yeah, they definitely had an agenda. Now, but what about the comedy element? This idea that Brian Williams, are they trying to sort of integrate the Daily Show model into regular news because so many people said that we get our news from the Daily Show, that now everything's got to have this sardonic edge to it?
I don't think they'll do it so much with the broadcast. I think it's all to make these guys personalities.
Okay.
To make them brand names.
So they're not going to do stories and go, pfft. And like
No. But what you will see, and we've been seeing this for some time, these guys, you know, they have gone on the show in the past, like the Letterman or whatever, and done sort of their deadpan things.
Yeah.
Well, Brian Williams, I've done Conan with him. He's a very funny guy.
Yeah.
In some respects.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's surprising when you get a newscaster that's got, gets off of the news and all of a sudden he's cracking jokes and hanging out. But, you know, he's a congenial, funny person.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, people who hang around newsrooms, like, they pick it up. It's a very joshing, you know, sarcastic atmosphere.
Yeah.
But with the Anchorman, you've got to have that voice so that it makes it funnier because you're doing it kind of deadpan. You're not expecting it.
Right.
Know?
So what do you see on the air these days that's getting you crazy or you think is great? What do you make of this this Desperate Housewives phenomena?
Well, you know, what I think is absurd about it is people are talking about it as if it's really realistic. I mean, the whole thing is that it's so completely a fantasy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, come on, Nicolette. I mean, we'd all like the notion of Nicolette Sheridan washing the car in a slow motion. You know, I mean, all of these incredible babes, you know, and leading the audience. I mean, to me, it's as much a fantasy as Sex and the City was, you know, because nobody could live the life that those gals lived in Sex and the City.
Well, that washing the car thing, that's like hackneyed almost.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is because, doesn't it go all the way back to Cool Hand Luke?
Yeah, I think it does.
I mean, it was. It was like
when the prisoners are on the bus.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, then there's like a shot from inside the car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
And George Kennedy, they're all sitting there drooling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it goes back to that. But you know, that's fine. I mean, people need that sort of fantasy escapism, and it's, you know, it's well done, it's well paced.
Is it fantasy, and is it a fad, or is it going to be around? Are we going to see more Desperate Housewives, like we saw spinoffs from that god-awful Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, or whatever it was?
Well, I think they'll do spinoffs, but they won't work as well. It's like all the shows, there have been a lot of shows that have already bombed, shows like Hawaii and things like that, where they try to do the unsolved. There have been a lot of shows that tried to play off of the OC.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those shows have already sort of come and gone.
I haven't watched any of them. Isn't that weird? I don't know if I'm completely out of the loop or it's our hours, but I haven't watched any of them.
I think it's partly our hours, but I have a real problem with somebody trying to make that part of California look hip. I'm sorry. It's just not, you know, I got a problem with it, you know. I mean, Anaheim, come on.
Yeah.
You know, the birth of the place where they birthed the shopping mall, for God's sake. I mean, come on. How is that suddenly, and the angst that comes from teenagers, I mean, how is that hip?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the mall is like the entire country's a mall now. So
that it gives them a chance to use really beautiful performers, and that's what they really want to do. They want to show off bodies.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was porn.
No. It's everything now. That's exactly it. It's the pornification of society. Jim Walcott, the book is Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I hope you come back soon.
We like talking to you. You know, obviously, it's great to talk to you, Riley. And there's our liberal agenda for today.
All right.
From the Streisand compound, write these down, folks. Here's how you can start your day right. One, this holiday season, object to the term bowl full of jelly as offensive to people of size. Two, stand in front of church manger scenes shouting, this is an example of the inadequate housing available for children of single parents. Three, call Afghan President Hamid Karzai. Tell him to wean Afghanistan's economy off of heroin production. They should switch to methadone production. Four, write a we're here, we're queer type chant for every oppressed sexual minority. Find a rhyme for transgendered. Five, Phrase of the day, if you just drop it in a conversation. If you do take Christ out of Christmas, you end up with más, which is Spanish means more. That's no accident, people. You hear me? No accident. Wake up.
Anyway, it's been a fun day, man.
Yes, man. Thank God.
Tomorrow, we've got David K. Johnson, financial reporter for the New York Times, and Ned Aaron, president of the Alliance for Justice. So we got some stuff going on tomorrow, and Friday, we're in Boston. Have a good one, Aaron.
You too, Riley.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason.